G'day. My name's Indy Wood. You're listening to The Local Update, a podcast looking at local issues and events taking place around the Bega Valley. And on today's episode, we'll catch up with brand new Bega Valley Shire Council Mayor Sharon Tapscott. Check in on the recent sale of the Australasia Hotel in Imlay Street, Eden, and what that means for the community of Eden. And of course, while we've got the mayor on the line, we better find out exactly how this community, the Bega Valley, is going in our current climate. All that and more coming up on The Local Update, produced by Indie Media and available at indiemedia.com.au. First up, though, as we do each week, we'll catch up with my friend and yours, local legend Graham Farram.
Hey, Indigo. It's nice to be back with you today. I've been talking previously about using this opportunity for journals, diaries. If you've got old people in your midst, well, anyone, really, everybody's got a memory. You can do like you and I are doing, Indigo, and record something for later on to listen to, and that's a good thing. First thing I want to do today is a little story by Alice Otten out of Tales of the Far South Coast, Volume 1, published in November 1982, that Alice Otten lived an interesting and very, very long life. This one caught my eye. It's simply called Isolation. Well, we've all been doing a bit of that, but this is different. We're no longer remote, but we're regional, and you can be very isolated here, and of course with travel restrictions and all of that, difficult to keep up with people. But in the earlier days down here, it was much more difficult, and especially if you lived down at Green Cape and you were a light keeper. They used to have about 3 light keepers down there, because at sometime in the night, you know, somebody had to get the candle going again, and you couldn't have one person waking up all the time to do that, because they'd never get any sleep. So there were 3 light keepers down at Green Cape, I believe. This is Alice Otten, Isolation, page 65. All along the northern side of the point of Green Cape, deep and dangerous cliffs fall down to big, scattered rocks in the turbulent sea below. Above this is a high fence, which was built as a safeguard and also formed one side of the enclosure in which were the cottages of the lightkeepers. Sometime between 1916 and 1918, the small son of one of these lightkeepers, aged between 2 or 3 years, somehow got out and fell over these cliffs. In front of the sheer cliffs, there was a slope. He rolled about 20 feet, but then fell 70 feet altogether, finishing with his head wedged between 2 rocks. It was said at the time that he was a small child and very light, and these factors were in favour as he fell. He had to be brought 16 miles through the bush in a sulky over a rough track to the whaling station at the mouth of the Kaya River and the nearest boat. His mother nursed his unconscious little body all the while. He was loaded onto a boat which crossed 3 miles of unpredictable bay to Eden and thence by vehicle to the Pambula Hospital. The boy was unconscious for 4 days, but recovered, only to be drowned 6 years later on the bar at the mouth of the Kaya River, near the whaling station. A bit of a cautionary tale, that one. I've been a bit reflective over this week. You know, there are people having children right now, not that I know anyone personally. There are old people who are passing from us that have nothing to do with COVID. And then, of course, there is misadventure. So, you know, when you start going out again, keep an eye on each other, especially young children. They certainly at that age, the terrible two, They have more energy than I do. They can run around and do all sorts of things that are well beyond me now. So that's an interesting reminiscence by Alice Otten. There's no exact facts in it. They're sort of things that she's remembering. There are other reminiscences by Alice Otten in Volume 2 and Volume 3 of Tales of the Far South Coast, and they're worth a look at too. Might get to have a look at those in the future. But on diaries, as I've been going through Bill Bailey's History of Beda, I noted that there were quite a few references, half a dozen or so references to W.H. Brain, early school teacher, arrived here in 1865. And I mentioned a couple of them when I read out his biography that Bailey had put together, using that diary as well. That's on pages 99-100 of Bailey's History of Beda. But I thought I'd start with this little quote from it. This is page 14 of the History of Beda, which is available in our library. When the museum opens, you can go and buy a copy or order a copy. We have the copyright on that down at the Beda Pioneers Museum. In part two, the section titled Early Communal Life, Bailey records, in a dispatch to Lord John Russell on September the 28th, 1840, Governor Sir George Gibbs stated that he was hopeful of establishing an overland route from Sydney via the Monero, spelled with an E and one O there, to Twofold Bay, stating, at this later place, Twofold Bay, there is a very large cattle station belonging to Dr. Imlay, formerly a surgeon in the Navy. But the usual communication with it is by water. That's from Volume 20, page 841 of Historical Records of Australia. In those times, each pastoralist ran his own cutter to the nearest known coastal inlet. And so you can see the nearest known. In those days, people weren't sure where was the closest place and which was the best place to bring in a boat. But supplies could be carried on pack horses or pack bullocks. They were arranged in bulk. And Sergeant McCausland was said to have been employed as a purveyor of wine, spirits, slops and sundries. That's from Brain's diary. He, therefore, is the first storeman in the district. For those living away from Imlay's station, no medical attention was obtainable till in the 1840s. Dr. Waddell's services were available. The only record of his work seems to be a simple epitaph in the old Corrigeri Cemetery, erected to the memory of Richard Waddell, MD, who died January 1851. An interesting abbreviation on that headstone. January is put down as capital J-A-N-Y. Considering Brain arrived in Beda in 1865, his diary entry on Sergeant McCausland displays his interest in the early history of Beda. He also found cause to visit the cemetery at Corrigeri and records in his diary those buried there. Mr. White, Mr. Spence, two Whites, Dr. Waddell, two Underhills, Mrs. Goff, Jim Solver, Hopkins' child, Mrs. Gleason, Rob Burnett, and Hayden. By 1942, when Bailey's writing his history, he records, the only graves remaining marked are those of Richard Waddell, MD, Robert Spence, Barbara Spence, spouse of John Gleason, Janet Spence, and John James White. Now, one of those Whites I mentioned earlier would have been Isaac White. And he had misadventure. He was struck by lightning in May one year, very early. He's buried over there at Corrigeri. On my last visit, Dr. Waddell's tombstone, although restrained by star droppers and wires, is slowly falling forward to the ground. Bailey also reports that at the foot of a granite boulder, George Inlays was the first recorded interment in the district on December 26, 1846, at the Tarraganda Cemetery. Of course, other people had died and been buried, but not much records of it. On page 17, Bailey records that early in 1851 came the first and most disastrous flood in Bega's history. Gale, hurricane, and torrential rain followed in quick succession. People fled to the ranges with neither food nor matches. People who took refuge on haystacks were carried down till the haystacks broke up when they were drowned. In all, 17 lives were lost in the district. One down at Pandula too. That weather was just a bit severe. We've seen it. Those south coast lows when they come in. Different entry now on page 40 of the history of Bega. It's recorded here. Perhaps Brain was on a visit to a fellow teacher. He recorded in 1866 a description of the Woolloomla school. A wretched slab hovel, 16 by 10. No door, no windows. On page 42, Brain also notes in his diary about 1872 that the Church of England was in need of repairs. This is in Bega. Reverend Knight preached. And the church roof flaps about like a tent cover, the whole building quaking and grunting as if about to collapse itself. When Brain was about halfway through his second term of editorship of the Bega Gazette, transport was still carried on by horse and bullock teams and coaches. Teams often stuck in the Auckland River crossing. On the 11th of February 1891, the Bega Gazette reported, "A day or two ago, a lady saw a heavily loaded bullock team crossing the Bega River. Notwithstanding a liberal dose of whip and a horrible stream of lurid profanity from the driver, the load remained stationary. Several ladies and children were in the neighbourhood and had to listen to the bad language. Whip and swearing having no effect, the driver obtained a heavy waddy and sent a shower of crushing blows upon his team, the ribs of which must be strong if some of them were not broken." In the verse chapter, People and Places, of classic Australian short stories, Summit Press 2002, this is in our library, and I'm looking at page 341, a traditional description of the driver is given in Bullocky Bill. "As I came down Talbingo Hill, I heard a maiden cry, 'There goes old Bill the Bullocky. He's bound for Gundagai.' A better poor old beggar never cracked an honest crust. A tougher poor old beggar never drug a whip through dust. His team got bogged on the 5 Mile Creek. Bill lashed and swore and cried, 'If Nobby don't get me out of this, I'll tattoo his bloody hide.' But Nobby strained and broke the yoke and poked out the leader's eye. And the dog sat on the tucker box, 5 miles from Gundagai."
Graham Farram is a long-term local here in the Bega Valley, the former proprietor of Mumford's Books, a second-hand bookstore in the main street, and also a member of the Bega Pioneers Museum. We catch up with him each week. Big news out of Eden this week, with the Bega Valley Shire Council announcing that they have sold the historic Australasia Hotel for $150,000. Mayor Sharon Tapscott tells me they purchased the venue in 2016 for $350,000.
"We were looking at the time to sort of activate the main street of Eden. it was a very valuable piece of land which was being sold at a very small price. And there were a number of things that we could do with that land. One of the most important things that came out of it was the laneway that was a pedestrian laneway or was a vehicle laneway at the time. But it was the pedestrian access to the 100-odd car parks that we had at the back of the Australasia or at the back of that shopping complex in Imlay Street. And if we did not control that pedestrian access, then we had no way of pedestrians getting from the shopping precinct to their parked cars. So that was a strategic reason for purchasing the building, to secure that laneway.
One of the real positives to come out of Bega Valley Shire Council owning that property for a period of time is that the building was heritage listed. This, of course, means that we will retain a sense of the history of the main street of Eden.
It was an iconic building that stands in the middle of Eden. It's one of the only buildings left. And although it was a very ugly 1960s building, we knew that the facade still sat behind it. So we knew there was an opportunity there to refurbish that facade and make it a real focal point of the main street. It should have been heritage listed from the onset, and it was missed. And so that when our LEP came up, it wasn't listed. And so we had to then go about relisting it. So we've listed the building. There's a beautiful staircase in there, a carriage staircase and other fittings in there that are significant and very important to our area. So there was a number of things in there that needed to be, kept for the community, and there was a lot of community education around that. There's two different types of heritage listing. There's your state listing and then there's your local listing. It's listed on our local listing, which means that all that means really is that when a developer comes to do something, he's got another overlay of directions that he has to go through, another overlay of qualifications that he has to go through to make sure that he's doing the right thing by that building.
The building was purchased in 2016 with the intention of council using it. However, Mayor Sharon Tapscott tells me councillors couldn't agree on how to actually go about making that happen.
We had drawings made up of what we could do with it, and we were going to, you know, maybe relocate the library, relocate the information centre, make it into a civic centre of some description. We could have funded it through a number of different avenues. And then, so we were having this all drawn up and done, and then we came to the next council election. And then the new council that came in decided that's not what they wanted to do. So then we put it out for sale. But I have to say that it wasn't a unanimous decision to do that. It just never worked out. And then we're still the councillors who wanted to keep it were still very keen to pursue funding. But it just was not something that we could get a majority of councillors to agree on.
The Australasia Hotel was purchased by local developers, so we will definitely see a change to the operation of that site. The good news, though, is the heritage listing requires the developers to restore the facade to its original 1904 appearance.
That was our intention from the onset, to purchase it, to bring the facade back for the benefit of the street, for the benefit of the tourism, and then to activate the space behind as a civic space. And there's a fair bit of land there. There's an opportunity to do something with that land, an opportunity to connect the car park up with the buses so they don't have to park in the main street, just to activate the whole space. That was the original intention of the purchase of the property. But then we had an election and there were people who didn't like that idea, and there's only 9 of us, and so if 5 want to go one way and 4 want to go the other, that's democracy at its best.
As to the question of whether another site might be turned into a civic space in Eden, Mayor Sharon Tapscott was direct in her response.
No.
Okay. All right.
Well, that opportunity has been lost, hasn't it?
The renovations on the Hotel Australasia site have already begun, and it'll be interesting to see what that site ends up becoming. Sharon Tapscott is brand new to the role of Mayor with Bega Valley Shire Council. After popular Mayor Christy McBain stepped down from the position when she decided to stand in the upcoming by-election after Mike Kelly withdrew from his position as the Labor member for the seat of Eden Monaro. I thought I should take the opportunity to ask our new mayor how she's going in the role.
It's a bit surreal because it's sort of come out of the blue. It's nothing like taking over when you're in the middle of a disaster. So it's a bit hectic, I suppose you'd say. Yeah, a bit hectic. Yeah. So I suppose once I've got through that, and it's a bit difficult too because all the people you've got to catch up with is by Zoom now, and you know, there's a lot to be understood in this space at this particular moment.
How's the community going in this current disaster situation?
We've got a really resilient community. You know, they come back from so many different disasters thrown their way. We've got a template for reacting through disasters. You know, we're benchmarked against how community should react because we do it so well now. Mm. We're so practiced at it. You know, just pick yourself up, dust yourself off, look for your neighbour, see how they are. They're worse off than you. Well, then you help them. If they're not worse off than you, then you just go and do what you need to do. We've got a long way to go. Things are going to change. There's no two ways about it. We've got, you know, the fires, which have had a really detrimental effect on how people live and what their future plans are. Then we've got the mental health issues around all of that. And now we've got COVID and how we do business is changing. There isn't going to be a lot left of what we know as normal. And we're going to have to get on with that. We'll have a new normal. I'm hoping our new normal might bring some really big advantages for us. You know, maybe we won't be so frenetic. Maybe we'll be able to look at where we live and be very, very grateful for where we live and look towards protecting it.
I'll take this opportunity to ask you what assurances you can give communities that have been affected by the fires that they haven't been forgotten in this COVID situation?
I can give you an absolute assurity that our council has not forgotten one person. We are so cognitive of everybody in every little hamlet, in every little locality, in every little bush block that has been affected. And we take that story daily to whomever is handing out the money so that we can go and get more services on the ground. And we are absolutely looking to get out as quick as we possibly can to do our face-to-face, because there is nothing like standing with a person and hearing, you know, and seeing their face and connecting with them in their own space,
mm-hmm.
whether it be a paddock or a town hall or an oval or whatever it is we can manage to do. But I can absolutely guarantee you they are the forefront of my mind every single day.
All right. Is there anything else you can think of, Sharon, that we need to talk about, whether it be about the Australasia or any of these other conversations we've had?
I think we're going to be having more difficult conversations. I think the money that's being thrown out around at the moment is there is a lot of money. We have to get as much as we can for our area. And after that, I think that'll be the well will run dry. So we will need to make some really difficult decisions and have some strong conversations, but it will be community-led. If there's something that, as a mayor, that I absolutely understand, again, is that this needs to be community-led and it needs to be, our community needs to be informed. And I live in this community. I've lived in this community for a long, long time. I've had three businesses in this community and I understand the difficulties people are going through, and I don't want their difficulties to be exacerbated any further. But we're going to have some difficult conversations.
Sharon Tapscott is the recently appointed mayor of Bega Valley Shire Council. And in case you're wondering, the way it works is you, as residents of the Bega Valley, vote on councillors themselves, and then those councillors vote in a meeting for the individual positions within the council. You're listening to The Local Update, a podcast looking at local issues and events taking place around the Bega Valley. This podcast is produced and published every Wednesday morning on indymedia.com.au. My name's Indy Wood. Thank you for your company this week. This, of course, is episode 10 of the podcast, the end of season one. Looking forward to more fantastic episodes throughout the weeks to come. If you want more info on what we are about and perhaps want to nominate story ideas for the local update, indymedia.com.au is the website to go to. You can always hit me up by email, indy@indymedia.com.au. As I said, my name's Indy Wood. It is a pleasure to be with you each week here on The Local Update.